Looking for something new to add to your queue? Acorn TV brings you new British dramas and thrilling mysteries you won't see anywhere else. Streaming on your favorite device, visit signup.acorn.tv and use code STORYTELLING for an extended 30-day trial. Acorn TV, world-class TV from Britain and beyond.
My name is Ross Sutherland. This is the sound of me punching a library. Library fighting is a brand new activity for me. Nevertheless, I've decided to go in at very much the top level.
Yeah.
I've decided for my first fight to go up against the British Library. Yeah. Clearly, the best library this country has to offer. It's the largest national library in the world.
Come on.
I'm not a naturally confrontational person. I'm quite shy, usually. However, once you've committed to fighting the British Library, you've really got to commit. It's got to be an attack from the front, head on.
Jesus.
No trying to surprise it by coming round the side entrance like a coward. You have to believe in yourself.
Okay.
No matter how impossible the task might seem.
Oh, that was a bad one.
You want to know why? I understand. I can answer in two words. Arthur Craven.
Is it Russ? Is it Russell?
Ross.
Ross, sorry.
Hey, Ross. Hey.
About a month ago, I had a meeting with the BBC where they asked me if I would be interested in making a radio series for them on the life of the poet Arthur Craven.
Absolutely our first choice for this.
Yeah.
For this job.
They said to me, this guy Craven, he's almost entirely unknown in the UK, but he is this incredible literary character, they said. Some call him the grandfather of surrealism, a man who many believe actually invented performance art.
Yeah.
Not only that, they said, but the story of Arthur Craven is also an unsolved mystery, possibly the greatest unsolved mystery in the history of literature. One day, he completely disappeared off the face of the earth. No one knows what happened to him. Ross, they said.
Yeah.
We would like to commission you to tell the story of his life. Who knows, they said, maybe you could even shed some light on his mysterious disappearance. Maybe you could help write the last chapter in Arthur Craven's story and finally fill in some of those blank final pages.
I cannot tell you how excited I am to...
Absolutely our first choice for this job.
Yeah. Now, full confession. At the time of this meeting with the BBC, I'd never actually heard of Arthur Craven, although I lied and pretended I had in order to secure the job. I'm a self-employed artist. I needed the money, no shame in that. I was grateful for the work, humbled to be thought of, actually. Of course, that was back then, before I started picking fights with libraries. I'm maybe not the humble man I once was. After the meeting, I spent the next few weeks reading every poem I could find written by this supposed cult hero. It turns out there isn't a huge amount of Craven's writing out there, apart from a couple of magazines he put out in the mid-19-teens. That's pretty much all that remains of the actual poetry. I thought to myself, well, you know, this isn't going to take too long. But as it turns out, like, the real story of Arthur Craven is only hinted at within his writing. It's Arthur Craven's life itself that has made him into such a cult figure. The reason his influence can be tracked right across the art of the 20th century is not because of the stories that he wrote with his pen. It's more the stories he wrote with his body. Craven lived an extraordinary, implausible life. No, scratch that. He didn't just lead one life. He led multiple parallel lives.
Man of fashion, chemist, whore, drunk musician,
lady. Some under the name Arthur Craven. Some under the name Fabian Lloyd.
I'm just really keen on making people feel uncomfortable.
Or Edouard Archinard or Marie Lewitska.
An entirely different persona.
And that's just the start of a list of nom de plumes, alter egos, assumed identities, and fake IDs that researchers and sleuths are still adding to today. Yeah. He was the secret nephew of Oscar Wilde. He was also amateur light heavyweight boxing champion of France. He was also a notorious forger, apparently wanted by the Swiss government for the robbery of a jewellery shop. The BBC was right about the mystery element too. In 1918, Craven vanished off the face of the earth, last seen on a boat leaving Salina Cruz in Mexico, never to reappear again. No body was ever found. I can't say that I wasn't hooked, but yet, where do you start with someone like that? How do you even begin to put the pieces together? I made a call to Portland, Maine. I found a number for the writer Roger Conover, who'd written the introduction to Craven in the one book I'd found of his writing in translation.
He was a world tramp who led a hallucinatory existence, possibly the most elusive life of the 20th century. And when he finally disappeared, there was no body, there was no note, and there was no answer to the enigma of who that man was, of who that man was, of who that man was.
Roger knows pretty much more about Arthur Craven than anyone else, and even he thought me making this series was a mistake.
He did produce more than most artists will ever produce by producing nothing.
He's the abyss you look into, right? And who wouldn't want to chase that, try and understand that? It was becoming clear now that I had been handed an impossible task.
We have a look at the first script.
Well, the way that I tend to compose in my head, and then...
His only artifact was himself.
He's the abyss. I can stack the books if you'd like. So this is... Wait, and this one.
This question.
This is in my head right now.
Who he was.
Hi, Ross. Kenny Picard.
And this one as well. I mean, these are real page turns. These look very similar.
Right? Not even a body.
Yeah, I've got like a process.
Not even a note.
Percolation process.
So, yeah.
The actual writing process only takes a couple of minutes.
You're the writer. You're
I think the good thing is that, I don't need a lot of sleep. Arthur Craven had lived a fundamentally biographer-proof existence. Any attempt to tell his story was going to be an exercise in futility. You could say, I've got about as much chance of capturing Arthur Craven as I do of beating a 180,000-ton concrete building in a fistfight. Yeah. In the end, it was Arthur Craven himself who gave me the strength to continue. I was lying in bed one night, panicking about what I'd gotten myself into. All the contradictory stories about Arthur Craven, the wild tales, the gossip, the mysterious disappearance, it was all too much. I decided the only possible strategy was to put all the rumours aside and to concentrate entirely, for now at least, on his poetry. After all, like, this slim volume of poetry was still the closest thing I had to Craven's consciousness. I picked up his book from my nightstand. I had to start with the poet in their own words.
Hooey!
Yeah, that is actually how the poem begins.
Only been back in London from Bucharest 2 days before bumping into the man I was after. The one who would meet all the expenses of a 6-month tour.
So this is one of Arthur Craven's prose poems. It's presented almost like a piece of memoir, but as far as I understand it, it's a piece of fiction. At this moment in the poem, he's in a taxi on the way to the train station.
The moon, as bloated as a million, presented a fair analogy with a digested rheumatism tablet.
Once Craven boards the train, he immediately becomes obsessed with
the fascinating heavyweight sitting opposite me, who seemed to be sound asleep.
A man Craven describes as
a beastly little bourgeois.
Despite Craven clearly
disliking this guy. The tone of the poem starts to shift into a kind of ironic love poem.
I was thinking, never has moustache emanated such an intense corporeality. And, above all, my God, how I love you.
It's almost as if it doesn't matter if a feeling is positive or negative. Cravan's in love with physical intensity of any kind if it moves him biologically. No matter what it is, Cravan is drawn towards it.
And while Lophagus, in the glow of your loving, our tangled waistcoats entwine my darling cauliflower, I flow your vast range and your colours in an amalgam of Jack Johnson, elephant seal and wardrobe. Our turds glisten like watered silk. Fuck! Fuck! The beat of the breeches in the final abdominal spasm. Property owners are termites, I exclaimed suddenly, hoping to wake the old buffer up, of whom I'd had it up to here, and give him a start. Then, looking him in the whites of the eyes once more, you heard right. I'll say it again at the risk of getting myself locked up. By the beard of the nanny goat and the whiskers of the she-rat, property owners are termites. From the astonished look on his face, I could see that he took me for a madman or a feral ruffian, but he pretended not to understand, so afraid was he that I'd give him a knuckle sandwich.
He's actually just really keen on making people feel uncomfortable. He presents himself in the writing as someone who is constantly, I think in everything he writes, trying to shock and trying to break down the reader's expectations and make them uncomfortable. I think that's really interesting.
This is poet and critic Sandeep Palmer, who's had some run-ins with Cravan during her own research.
Time. And it is that critique of bourgeois, kind of capitalist literature and art that we see in the writing that he produces.
I really need some help getting my head around, actually.
Our turds glisten like watered silk.
But that's...
Fuck!
What do you think of him as well?
My God, how I love you.
I mean, Cravan was very good-looking. I think we can't discount the fact that that must have mattered. But was he a likable person? It's hard to say. There's a picture of him with a cat on his lap.
Yeah, with his kittens.
And then there's that, and then there are other more aggressive portraits. But he doesn't want his work to be read as a kind of bourgeois pastime in the writing that he produces. Everything he does is offensive. He is a man unto himself. He's rebellious to the core.
What do you do with a writer whose attitude towards poetry readers sounds similar to their attitude towards people they meet on trains? Still, if I was looking for something about Arthur Cravan that I could be absolutely certain of, then maybe this was it. Arrogance. Reading this poem, I realised if I was to stand any chance of capturing Arthur Cravan, then I would need to become just as arrogant as he was, if not more so. I couldn't be the over-apologetic, self-deprecating mess that my mother raised and loved. Sizing up against the reality-shifting 230-pound criminal boxer poet, the old Ross would be instantly crushed like a beetle. No. The path was clear to me now.
So he's got a bit of height on me.
Yeah.
But I'm more agile.
The only way to catch a Cravan was to be a Cravan.
Like, I feel it with my entire body, right?
I'd have to be reckless.
Come on.
I'd have to be rude.
Yeah.
I'd have to pick a fight that no one could win and go in swinging regardless.
All right, I'll stop. Fight's over. All right, but let the record show. I did not back down. I could have gone longer. I could have gone all night long. All night long. Jumbo Jumbo. You got a lucky break, mate. I am coming back. I am coming back. And I am coming back.
Oh, Cravan. You slab of pork. You pantomime in a slaughterhouse. I have long waited for a worthy opponent. I will hunt you down, Cravan. Every single version of you. I will
untangle the rat's nest of your life. The chase is on, you magnificent badger. My name is Ross Sutherland, the writer, the poet, the playboy genius, the greatest dancer of his generation, humanity's last great literary hope, and I am coming for you, Craven. My darling, it's time to wake up now. The Escape Artist, Episode 1, The Poet, was written, presented and produced by me, Ross Sutherland. It was produced for the BBC by Melvin Rickaby. The voice of Arthur Craven was David Reed. The music was by Jeremy Walmsley.